So my name is István Haller, and today I'm going to talk to you about Dowser, a tool we designed that leverages program analysis to make software testing scalable and efficient. So here we are at a security conference, and I come from a security group. So why are we talking about software testing? Because software testing doesn't immediately link to software security. Well, the problem is that even though we have discovered, and even though buffer overflows have been discussed and first described over 40 years ago, they still represent a problem today. And namely, they are still a top three security threat. So it means that it's something that's serious and we have to take into consideration. We have to find a ways to mitigate it. Also, the problem is not going to go away soon by itself because applications grow at a rapid pace, source code sizes increase exponentially, and at some point, just manual testing just doesn't keep up. So what are the possible solutions? One thing that people have been looked at at the last few years were possibilities of containment, which is great and excellent. And it's critical for legacy applications, but it may not affect all users because it's like an opt-in policy. It means that you have to opt in for the containment. So it's better if we just, why not just look back at the root cause and try to solve the problem at the root cause? That means to make software testing more efficient, to make software testing deployed in practice everywhere, at every company, every software product. So what are the possibilities of automated software testing that are available today? So first of all, there are static analysis, which has been deployed in practice for the last few years. One prevalent example is, for example, Microsoft, who employs static analysis in its driver certification process. And it's a critical piece that ensures that at least really simple bugs don't get into these device drivers. The problem is that static analysis is difficult to make interprocedural, context sensitive, so it cannot deal with really critical and difficult scenarios. And that means that there is always going to be a large number of false positives or false negatives, depending on how you configure your heuristics. But what we want to aim at is not to compete with static analysis, because we still believe they are deployed in practice for a reason. They are really good at detecting bugs in simple scenarios. We don't want to compete with that. We want to complement static analysis. We want to make sure to cover the types of bugs that are not possible to be detected by static analysis today. Essentially, that means complex code patterns. And what kind of techniques can we use for that? Well, if static analysis doesn't work, we have to go to dynamic analysis. And the dynamic analysis of our choice is symbolic execution. But as any dynamic analysis techniques, there's a problem in that you can only observe what you execute. Well, if you're running dynamic analysis, software testing is simple. It's relatively easy to see if a specific memory access is an overflow or not, or if a specific memory access generates a segmentation fault or not. When you're running dynamic analysis, the problem shifts from the detection part to essentially an input generation problem, because you have to have code coverage. You have to make sure that you're testing enough parts of the application to trigger all the relevant bugs that are stored in there. The problem is that if you want code coverage, that means you want to cover the entire application, every combination of possible input that can execute the application, and as you can immediately think about it, it's exponential. As you increase the input, every single byte, that means a number of extra combinations, and it's a combinatorial problem in essence. So just to give you a brief intro about what the testing model, what our assumptions are for this paper, well, we focus on buffer overflows because they are really security critical type of bugs, and not many people have been looked at them, and also it's a difficult problem with symbolic execution because buffer overflows don't work well with code coverage. It's not enough to have code coverage to detect buffer overflows because buffer overflows don't depend on a given line of code being executed, but a combination of lines being executed in a given order. And also buffer overflows are typically triggered by large inputs, and large inputs means an even bigger exponential explosion. And we consider not only that we look at buffer overflows, but also complex buffer overflows. Because as we state, static analysis can deal with a simple case. Don't waste effort on doing something that other people are doing much better than you do. Focus on the complex scenario. And throughout this paper and presentation, we assume that source code is available. It's not highly necessary, but some components of ours rely on it, and we will discuss a bit later on about this. The availability of source code is typical for software testing, so it's not a really strong assumption that we make. And we also suppose that there's also some minimalistic test inputs that can reach every complex loop. We don't care about an in-depth existing test suite that the application has. Only just one input for every major loop, something that just reaches it. And this is sort of typical, like you don't write a piece of software and most of the functionality, you don't even have an example input that reaches that functionality. That means that that functionality may even be completely dead. So just to also give you an example of why Dowser is critical, let's look at the Nginx web server, which is a top three web server, and the buffer overflow vulnerability in its URI parser. There's a code note snippet here. The entire while loop is around 300 lines of code. And the problem is that essentially you have 300 lines of code. The application is huge and essentially takes HTTP requests as input, which is far too complex for the traditional symbolic execution tools. And it's just not scalable and doesn't work at all. And essentially the problem is that this pointer U is operated by different type of arithmetic operations, including increment and decrement by 4. And at some point, it just receives an invalid value. The problem is that, again, going back to the code coverage problem, even if you have 100% code coverage with a tool and you're like, yes, I have 100% code coverage, that means it doesn't contain any bugs. You may not even have triggered the bug, because it not only takes you to execute all of each of these lines of code individually, you have to execute them in a specific order, in a specific configuration, in order to trigger the bug. So how do we propose to solve this problem in Dowser? Well, our main objective is to focus testing around small specific code fragments. We don't aim to test the entire application at once, but we want to do something that we call spot checking. Just like a spotlight, we want to highlight specific segments of the code and focus our testing effort exactly around those specific fragments of code. And this makes it sure that the testing process is reduced in exponentiality, even if we have to test numerous examples of code, for example. The approach will build on symbolic execution, but it will be guided by an in-depth analysis. Both static and dynamic analysis will be employed in order to make this testing effort more focused, more efficient. And another thing about Dowser that's slightly different from what's out there is we wanted to provide an end-to-end solution. We don't just want to provide a guided fuzzer. We want to provide an end-to-end solution which both detects the code fragments that we're interested in, also provides some kind of ranking, because we don't want to waste time looking at some code fragments which have 99% chance of not containing bugs. We want to look at those that have a high probability of containing bugs. And so we want to make sure that our testing effort is spent wisely. And second of all, this spot checking approach also allows us to introduce a bit of modularization. Because essentially, if you just look at a single loop of an application, every single loop is only going to operate on parts of the input. A subset of the input is relevant for one given loop at a time. And that means that if you can just make testing focusing on that part of the input and leave all the rest alone. And finally, in the third stage, we're going to apply symbolic execution, which we will guide by information from steps 1 and 2. And we see how that goes later on. So we start with the first step, which is the dowsing process itself, in which, as I said, we want to identify the loops that may contain potential buffer overflows and also rank them on the probability itself. So how do we do this? Here we employ a static analysis approach because we want to make sure that we cover the entire application. Dynamic analysis would, again, go back into the code coverage problem. And we just have a chicken and egg problem where we try to solve dynamic analysis via another dynamic analysis method. So we want to avoid this. We just do static analysis. And we apply it at the level of the compilation for increased information. So this is one of the locations where we really benefit from the source code availability, because during the compilation, you have access to more high-level information and typing information, essentially. And we just search for loops which contain pointer dereferences and try to rank them based on the data flow. Our intuition is that the chance of a loop containing a bug is directly dependent on the complexity of the loop itself. Essentially, if the loop is too simple, then manual code review or static analysis would have already found the bug. If the bug is so hidden that it pops up, let's say, 2 years later in a CV entry, like, oh, and that old version of the problem, nobody figured it out, there's a really hidden bug there, that's the type of bug we want to target. And that's the type of bug for which the data flow complexity should be reasonably complex enough that nobody has seen it for the last 2 years. So again, going back to our running example from Nginx, this would be the data flow graph of the loop itself, with U being the pointer and different arithmetic operations, and again, dot, dot, dot for all the remaining other cases. And intuitively, just to look at how the algorithm works, the problem is not that you increment, for example, U in different locations. For example, this would increase the number of instructions, but as a human reading the source code, you just see increment here, increment there, increment there. You can still reason about what is going on with the pointer value itself. The problem is when you start to introduce different constants, like -4. And then suddenly, as a human, like, OK, -4, does that mean that can it drop below the initial value of U? Well, it depends on how many times U was incremented. Suddenly, you get into this kind of context-sensitive analysis, which is difficult for static analysis and humans alike. And this is the type of scenario we want to deal with. So for example, I just gave you intuition about part of what makes the ranking method of Dowser work. So I don't want to go into the details. You can read it in the paper about the different numerical values associated with the data flow graph. I just want to show you what its effect is on real binaries. So essentially, here we compare the ranking efficiency of the proposed heuristic compared to something that's like a baseline solution, instruction count. You just take the same data flow graph but count the number of instructions. And finally, against random order. What would happen if we would not perform any ranking at all? And we performed this analysis on a wide variety of buffer overflows, 17 in total from 7 different applications, and just compared how the buggy loops compared to all the other loops in the application. And here we see our evaluation. What is cool is that at the 20% mark, the top 20% of the loops themselves already contain 80% of the bugs for our heuristic. This goes back to that intuition that a program spends 80% of its execution time in 20% of the code. It's similar here. The program has 80% of its bugs in the top 20% most complex loops, which just sort of makes sense. And this is what we want to leverage. And that means that by just looking at the 1/5 of the total number of loops, you can already find the vast majority of the available bugs. And if you're not convinced by Dowser, by the wrecking mechanism in Dowser, even the baseline solution operates quite well. The 80% mark is reached at the top 40% of analysis groups. That still means that even if you just do instruction counting, which is just the baseline solution, you can still get twice as many bugs by looking at the top 40% than if you would look at all the other low-ranking loops themselves. So the take-home message here is that even if you don't trust our method of evaluation or you just don't trust the heuristic presented in Dowser, you can still, the take-home message is use some kind of ranking, because ranking makes it sure that your testing effort is spent wisely. It makes sure that by a limited testing time, you can still get a large percentage of the bugs that are in the application itself. So now we can go on to input reduction. The idea is that with this spot checking approach, you're just looking at a single loop, and a single loop depends only on the parts of the total input itself. So we want to be able to infer this relationship between the different input bytes and the loop variables themselves. And just again, giving you the same example with Nginx, this is just a random HTTP request that could be sent to the server itself as part of the testing process, a lot of fields, a lot of option headers, et cetera. What happens is, if you're just interested in the URI parsing component, well, we're only interested in the red component, only that smart fragment of the entire input. All the rest of the input is completely irrelevant to us. We can just keep it a constant and don't even look at it during the testing process. Now, how can we do that? We do it via dynamic information flow tracking, where we just track how the different input bytes propagate and affect the internal variables of the program. This part has a few configurations. For example, one of the things that we definitely look at is implicit flows, because we consider implicit flows to be critical. But I don't want to go into the details about all the different configurations and granularity levels. You can find that in the paper, or we can discuss it in the coffee break. However, I do want to talk about the benefits. Again, just to repeat. So the problem is that symbolic execution is input-driven in nature, because it tries to do, because the main focus is on input generation. So as much of the input as we can eliminate makes the symbolic execution process simpler. It also introduces an implicit modularization. If you just make half of the input symbolic, suddenly you sort of have a modularization of the application by not even doing symbolic execution on the other part. And it's a fine-grained approach, because you can control it on a byte-by-byte basis. It's similar if you just define that function X and function Y are completely independent and test them independently, but without having to do these manual annotations, you implicitly figure it out via the dynamic information flow tracking. And it also enables us to do symbolic execution on a number of applications for which it wasn't impossible so far. For example, with FFmpeg, if you just think about it, like the smallest video file that's relevant for testing can easily reach 1 megabyte or 0.5 megabyte. That's really a small video file with 10 frames. And just 0.5 megabyte of symbolic data would just crash the currently existing tools. However, if you figure out via dynamic information flow tracking that a given loop is only influenced by a conversion table, suddenly you're only looking at a few hundred bytes of symbolic data instead of the whole movie file. Similarly with PDFs, where only maybe just a subcomponent of the PDF itself may be relevant, and you can just look at that. So finally, we reach the part where we talk about how we guide the symbolic execution process itself towards a potential bug. Because most of you may not be familiar with symbolic execution, I want to give you just a short intro of what symbolic execution is. Some authors also call it white box fuzzing, because the idea is that you don't just randomly want to generate input. You want to generate input that is relevant and that is new. So that means that you get feedback from the application, you get feedback from the existing executions to figure out rules for changing the input to generate new input and to generate new paths across the application. And its main purpose, as I said, is essentially test case generation, such that after the symbolic execution run, you have a number of 100 or 1,000 test cases, all of which can be used as like the main test suite of an application. Again, also just a small example of how symbolic execution looks in practice. Let's consider the following code snippet. We just have you compare a variable with 4, and then later on you compare the variable with 2. And this will read to three situations. We can already think about it. There's a situation where A is smaller than 2, there's a situation where A is between 2 and 4, and another situation where A is larger than 4. So symbolic execution just generates these three variants. It doesn't care about other values of A that may potentially occur because they don't affect the execution process itself. And how it can do it, essentially, for every time there's a divergence point, every time there's a conditional jump, it can look at the constraint solver and ask the constraint solver about the possibilities. For example, if A is already larger than 4, then A smaller than 2 doesn't make any more sense. So that's why the fourth branch here is missing, because it's an impossible to reach a configuration. So when we finished with steps 1 and 2 during our implementation, we were really happy. Like, let's apply it to an existing symbolic execution engine. Let's apply input reduction and dowsing. And hopefully, it brings really great results. Unfortunately, we were sort of met with resistance because it didn't seem to work at all, even though we were really doing a lot of input reduction and a lot of simplification already. So what seemed to be the problem? The problem was that even with input reduction, there's a huge number of conditional branches that are still left to be explored, and where just symbolic execution just gets stuck doing the same thing all over again. And there's also the intuition, well, okay, even with input reduction, not all the conditional branches are relevant for the pointer computation. We're only looking at a loop and its pointer computation. So for example, if you have a conditional like if the input is something, do a printf statement, the symbolic execution engine will still try to execute both branches and all the combination with the rest of the code, but somehow that's irrelevant to our analysis. Why are we even trying to test it? Just run it once and be done with it. It's just a printf statement. It doesn't change anything in the application. So our focus here was to make sure that if we ever look at a branch and its two outcomes, only look at those branches that have any kind of influence on the pointer value, either explicit by modifying the pointer value itself or implicit modifying some value which will later on have influence. And for this, we came up with a new search strategy that we call value coverage search, where the main goal is to cover all the possible values of a variable in the program. That means that every single execution path, in theory, should result in a new value associated to that given variable. So instead of looking at all the different, instead of looking at the code execution, you're looking at the dynamic property of variable values. And if you just apply this to a pointer, for example, if you just want to do execution where you get every single value of a pointer, then suddenly you're done with buffer overflow analysis. Because if you have covered every single value, then you clearly know there's an overflow or there's no overflow possible whatsoever. And just to show how this influences our evaluation, again, going back to our Nginx example from the beginning, in that example, the minimum size of the input that can trigger the vulnerability has 5 bytes. So we just took the regular off-the-shelf symbolic execution engine and ran it with a 5-byte symbolic URI. So it just made that, those 5 bytes symbolic by themselves. And the result, it finishes in 150 seconds. We were quite happy. Let's increase it to 6 bytes, because 5 bytes is the minimum. It's not that meaningless. 6 bytes, and it increases up to 800 seconds. 7 bytes, it's more than 3 hours. And suddenly we figure out there's a problem. You cannot just tell the tester, like, OK, you know that the URI is relevant. Make it a 7-byte symbolic value at most, and then you can find the bug. Testing for 7 bytes is mostly useless. Like, nobody's going to use a system that can only work up to 7 bytes. It's absurd. So we said, OK, this is a depth-first search, a default method in these tools. Let's try a more refined technique. And most of these papers focus on something called a code coverage search, where they try to optimize the search process to reach every possible line of code. This works for sure, right? Well, we started, again, 5 bytes. It's slightly slower than depth-first search. OK, there may be some overhead. The test scenario is quite small. Maybe it's going to be better in terms of scalability. We go up to 6 bytes. It's even worse. But suddenly, we figure out that while code coverage may work for some classes of bugs, for buffer overflow type bugs, code coverage metrics aren't really relevant. They just provide an additional overhead, and maybe even worse than just random depth first, just simple depth first search. Now, compared to this, what our value coverage search allows us to do is a huge boost in scalability. We could go up to 50 bytes and could go well beyond. We just stopped at 50 bytes because we found that to be a reasonable number. And even with 50 bytes, the total execution time is barely larger than what we had for 5 there. And again, the slope of the exponential, well, this is still an exponential, and I can tell you that the gradient itself, so the exponential factor is smaller than 1.1, it's something like 1.05. It's an exponential, but it almost looks linear, and it scales really well towards. While here, the exponential factor is something like a factor of 7. So going up to 8 bytes would mean a day of testing, and then 9 bytes a week, and you can get the gist of it. So just a bit of details about value coverage search is how can we do this? Well, as I said, only a small part of the execution paths will be relevant for the pointer computation. So we aim to learn this information dynamically by doing a small test run before the main bug search. And during that test run, we try to figure out how the branches themselves influence the value of the pointer in the end of the computation. And essentially, using this as feedback, we are able to figure out that two-thirds of the branches, in the case of the Nginx example, are completely useless. We completely eliminate them. And even from the other ones, we still figure out that some of them are more relevant. If you go to the true branch, it's more interesting than the false branch, and et cetera. And again, going back to the example, what happens is that instead of having all of these cases in the switch statement, suddenly we can dynamically eliminate most of them and just focus on the core differences. You have increment, decrement, and -4. And just look at combinations of these instead of multiple combinations of the increment operation. And finally, we reached the evaluation. Dowser was capable of finding 9 bugs in the 6 applications. 2 of the 9 bugs were previously undocumented. And what is interesting is that we didn't just run Dowser on these applications. We tried to use the traditional symbolic execution tool first, and it completely failed on all but one application. Because it just, if you give it a full PDF file as input, it just has nothing to do with that. Then we tried something that a configuration that we call magic, which is msymbex there, which is essentially give the symbolic execution tool the same information we know after input reduction. So still run the dynamic taint analysis, infer the information which parts of the input are relevant, make only those symbolic, but don't do any additional guidance. So just do this as if the tester itself would have perfect information from the application. And what happens is that, yes, this solves the problem for libexif, which is one of our smaller examples, and it works reasonably well there, but for all the other bigger applications, even just reducing the input by having this magic oracle is not enough. It's still greater than 8 hours. It's still impossible to do a proper testing process. While if you run these examples in Dowser, in every single time, you were able to trigger the vulnerability in less than 15 minutes. So finally, to conclude the talk, we have shown that to build an end-to-end solution for guided symbolic execution, that means that we perform both detection for the relevant code parts, and we perform the guidance itself and everything in the middle. And we have shown that the spot checking approach is truly capable of doing a really focused search, a really narrow search that goes down to the bug and doesn't waste time in anything else. We have also shown, presented a built-in prioritization mechanism, which we believe is really critical for any future testing project, as it can do wonders with optimizing your test effort. And we have also, Dowser itself contains heuristics that are all geared towards buffer overflow type bugs. Some other testing infrastructures work on more coarse-grained bugs or other types of bugs, but here every heuristic is geared towards this highly security critical bug of buffer overflows. And finally, our evaluation shows that Dowser has a significantly improved scalability compared to the existing tools out there today. So thank you very much for your attention. Any questions?
I'm Tim Fraser from DARPA. Thank you for your talk. I haven't read your paper yet, so this may be a dumb question. But at the end, you said that you would run a dynamic analysis to identify the lines of code, the branches that actually touched the pointer, that affected the pointer value, right?
Yeah.
So how can you gain assurance that your dynamic analysis found all of those lines?
Yeah, thank you for the really good question. Yeah, this is a problem of how much time can you essentially invest in that part of the, so essentially to invest in the learning process. Because while you can do that statically, the problem with the static approach is that some situations, for example, maybe both of the true and the false branches will, for example, increment the pointer. And you want to avoid this situation. You really want to focus on only those branches that provide a dynamic difference. And in this scenario, you just use symbolic execution with a really reduced input size, so as much as we can do. Like, it doesn't mean that you have to limit it to yourself to 3, but you can say, okay, I have time to do a learning phase of 1 hour, then I give it as much input as possible, I try to learn as much as possible in that hour, and in the end, you just use that information in your main run. But you're right, in case of certain applications, even that 1 hour of 1 hour learning process may not be enough, and you may not learn about all the relevant things going on there.
Oh, I'd like to echo that the work was very nicely done. You state that Dowser doesn't need a source, but that it helps. I'm just kind of curious as to how well or how the results are for the value coverage search when you aren't using source?
Value coverage search is all performed on binary level. So the symbolic execution engine that we're using works on binaries. The only locations where we used the source code was the static analysis for the loops, and the data flow ranking is significantly more difficult on binaries, but as we say, even just a regular instruction counting could work well. And the other part where we use the source is essentially in the symbolic execution engine to identify the buffer overflows. That means that we had to run some kind of detection mechanism. And we were using address sanitizer, which requires you to recompile the binaries. But the value coverage search is entirely performed on binaries.
Thanks for your talk. Good stuff. I'm curious, you didn't mention which semantics everything is, the symbolic evaluation is based upon. So I'm wondering what work it's based, I haven't read the paper yet, so I'm wondering how can I be sure your semantics is right?
The underlying symbolic execution engine is one of the most traditional ones out there. It's on the absolutely core level, it's based on the Klee symbolic execution engine, which has been out there for more than 5 years. And on top of that, we use S2E, which takes binaries and then transforms them into LLVM to perform the symbolic execution engine. The underlying symbolic execution engine runs on LLVM intermediate language. So it's not on higher level semantics. It's essentially almost binary level, but with a slightly more type information.
If there are no other questions, maybe let me ask one while our next speaker is getting set up. So if our next speaker could come up and get set up. You mentioned the benefit of having this ranking function to help you focus in on specific areas of the code, where in this case is loops with high complexity. And I guess you designed this for buffer overflows. Do you have any advice to people about how you would go about designing ranking functions if you wanted to find other kinds of vulnerabilities?
I would say that the simplest way is just looking at the existing techniques in reverse engineering, in binary reverse engineering or source reverse engineering and other analysis techniques, to just see what kind of features people are able to extract, and then start from there. Because there's a lot of information that you can already extract, even from strict binaries, that can really help you focus on what is relevant and avoid what is not.
Thank you.
Thank you.